The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Seiya Suzuki is on fire. David Robertson might be a closer. The Cubs are undergoing a transition. We talk about that and a whole lot more with Sarah Sanchez here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by WynnBET. I'm Jeff Erickson here, and my guest today is Sarah Sanchez. You can hear her on Bleed Cubby Blue and Cuppa Cubby Blue. She's also playing in Tout Wars. She's done work on Fangraphs before. Sarah, thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks for having me.
You bet. You bet. So, hey, it's a transitioning time for the Cubs. You know, we had a really good, strong generation, won a World Series, broke the drought, but it was tough. You had guys get traded away. Rizzo, Bryant, Baez. The core, a lot of the core is gone. Wilson Contreras is still there. What was tougher, the trades last summer or seeing those guys sign elsewhere this offseason?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I honestly, that trade deadline is one of the most devastating things that I've been through as a fan. And I get it. Baseball's a business. I've watched lots of guys come and go, but I have never seen a team, particularly a team that deals in loyalty and history the way that the Cubs do, right, just absolutely fail to extend any single player from that 2016 core. You know, earlier this offseason, I got into it a little bit on Twitter with some people, and I think that the way I can best explain it is I cheer for the Cubs because there's at least a hope that they're right, going to offer a Ryan Sandberg the biggest MLB deal in history at the time, right? Or they're going to try to bring back Greg Maddux. They botched it, but they tried. There was the fact that they couldn't extend one of Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, and it looks very much like they're not going to extend Wilson Contreras is pathetic. It's not why I cheer for a major team. If I wanted to cheer for a team that's just really good at calling up guys at the right possible moment and flipping them for prospects, I would cheer for the Rays.
Right. And you know, we're simpatico because, you know, I'm a Reds fan. It's been a disillusioning year and a half, starting with the Raisel Iglesias trade for nothing. And, you know, we're going to use that money, that flexibility to improve shortstop by playing Kyle Farmer there. You know, it just drives me crazy.
You know, I was just talking about the Reds on my podcast, Cuppa Cubby Blue. That episode dropped minutes before I dropped on with you. The Bob Castellini is up there acting like a very myopic billionaire who's like hopeful that the serfs can have some crumbs sometimes and they'll still come to the ballpark or I will. He literally threatened to move the oldest franchise in baseball. That is pathetic. And I'm over it. These owners are out of control.
They are. They really are. And you know, it's especially in the Cubs case too. I mean, you have all this fan goodwill. You have obviously one of the most historic stadiums in sports, let alone baseball. I've been there many, many times. I used to live four blocks from Wrigley, but you know, you have this incredibly loyal fan base, all the income you want, revenue stream you want, and you still go through this. And if you can make a baseball reason for it, I'd get it, but it wasn't. I mean, starting with the Chris Bryant contract manipulation dates back to that, even when they were competing, you know, they still used a financial reason to make a decision rather than a baseball reason. And teams like the Cubs, you know, any big market team should not be behaving like that.
100%. You know, and Jed Hoyer went out there and tried to say, oh, our offers to these players, when you see them, will think they're competitive. And that's true. They had a competitive offer to Anthony Rizzo. They offered him more years. They had a competitive contract discussion with Javier Baez that actually got cut short by the pandemic shortened season. But like, Javier Baez should get, you know, a little bump from loyalty and the fact that there is literally a street named after him in Humboldt Park. Like, you would hope that the Cubs owners would appreciate that Anthony Rizzo signed a team friendly deal to be part of your World Series core. And maybe you can tack on one extra year or $15 million extra to keep the man who should have a statue outside of Wrigley Field someday on your team, rather than trading him to the Yankees and being like, well, we couldn't do it. I mean, you were talking about letting Raisel Iglesias go for nothing. Kyle Schwarber was non-tendered by the Cubs over $2 million before he turned into Barry Bonds for the Washington Nationals and the Boston Red Sox last year. So I'm kind of furious about it. I am excited about some of the new guys. I think that there's a lot more hope in Wrigleyville than there was when this offseason started, but I'm pretty disillusioned.
Yeah, I can understand that. And especially, you know, because you look at the starting rotation and you see it's still work in progress. You see that there could be more investments there, but and especially now that I used to be like the biggest Kyle Hendricks honk out there. And we're starting to see when you don't have velocity and then you lose a mile an hour off that velocity, well, bad things happen. You don't have anything to change off of, and the changeup's your go-to. It's a problem.
Well, let's start with Kyle Hendricks, because a couple of things there are really interesting. You know, he had a great opening day start against the Milwaukee Brewers. He really looked like Kyle Hendricks of old. And then earlier this week, facing a Pirates team that really is a Triple-A team, that's not a Major League Baseball team, he could not locate at all. And it was telling to me after the game, Wilson Contreras was asked what happened with Kyle Hendricks, what went on there. And Wilson really didn't want to talk about it. He just like, he didn't have any command. And that was true. If you go back and look, a lot of times when Kyle Hendricks has gotten lit up, he's gotten kind of BABIP to death. You know, it's like a lot of soft contact, but it just dropped where a guy wasn't. And that will happen and should happen a lot with a pitcher who gives up a lot of soft contact. Sometimes your guys are just not going to be positioned right. But in this outing, that was not true. The Pirates were hitting him and hitting him hard. The exit velos between his first start and his second start, I think it was like 7 miles per hour difference between what the Brewers did against him and what the Pirates did against him. And he's got to be more of the Kyle Hendricks who showed up on opening day if he's going to be effective this year. I haven't started him yet. I have him on my Tout Wars team. He's on the bench. I don't dare start him yet.
You had a premonition that could not go wrong, and you follow that there at least, so you avoided the damage. I wonder, you know, too, with a pitcher like Kyle Hendricks, he's working with a lesser margin for error. If he's off by just a little bit, that leads to the bad exit velos. And, you know, he did this a little bit last year. I remember got cuffed around by the Braves badly to the point where I benched him the next week in a two-step. And the first start of that, I was like, oh, as he shuts down the Dodgers, I'm like, what am I doing? I'm benching Kyle Hendricks for two-start thing. And then he faced the Pirates and got knocked around. And that sort of maddening inconsistency is just difficult, especially because you're not getting the strikeouts to make up for it.
Right. Absolutely. You know, there's something interesting about Kyle Hendricks' struggles the last couple of years, really, that I want people to at least be aware of. I don't know that I have an answer for it, for when you should start him on your fantasy team, but I think it is interesting. I imagine that if you are a changeup specialist and you're a guy who really needs to locate, the constantly changing baseball is a disadvantage to you in a way that it is not to some other pitchers, right? Like if you're going to get like slightly different movement on a pitch that is already ridiculous and nobody can hit it, I think that's not quite the same impact that happens when you have to pinpoint your location absolutely perfectly in order to get outs like Kyle Hendricks does. And it's kind of what I think, and you would know better than I do, you're a Reds fan, kind of what I think happened with Luis Castillo a little bit last year too. I think that those guys that didn't have that power fastball, didn't have that power slider, really got impacted by the changing baseball a lot more than some other guys.
Let alone two different baseballs, as Dr. Meredith Wills has uncovered. Yet again, shenanigans from Major League Baseball. It's amazing that we're dealing with that. And every year, and now we have to think about the baseball. God, you know, I've been covering fantasy sports for 25 years, and that never used to be a thing. Yeah, there were years where there's the rabbit baseball. There were a couple of years in there. The Brady Anderson year comes to mind, that you're wondering, well, that, but it's also conflated with steroids and expansion. There are a lot of different other reasons for that. Now it's like every year, what ball are we playing with this year?
Well, and isn't it interesting that all of the random baseball shenanigans happen right as MLB buys Rawlings for product control? It's like, what type of control do you have when the baseball changes so much that all of us can see it in the data and all of us can see it in the games? You watch outfield, you know, they teach you to watch outfielders so you're not the fan who's cheering for the long fly ball instead of the home run. You can't even watch outfielders anymore. Outfielders don't know what those baseballs are going
to
do.
Right. Yeah, we all, you know, some people grow up wanting to be Michael Kay and getting excited over every fly ball. Man, they teach us not to be, at least, though. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm not comfortable starting Hendricks. In fact, I don't think I have him in a single league last year after having him in six or seven leagues last year. And it's weird. It's weird not having him. But they liked Kyle Hendricks so much, they went out and they signed a slightly different, slightly younger, slightly faster version of him in Marcus Stroman, another pitch-to-contact pitcher.
Marcus Stroman, they picked up Wade Miley off of waivers or when the, I think it was the non-tender from the Reds. I can't remember if it was a non-tender or not. But like, yeah, they've got a whole rotation of guys who are going to give you soft contact. And as far as I can tell, look, Nico Horner's defense so far this season at short has been outstanding.
Yep.
But I am not a fan of the idea that you're going to run that rotation out there and hope that Andrelton Simmons is going to somehow be the Andrelton Simmons of old. It really kind of boggles my mind from a defensive standpoint. I do like Stroman a lot. I think Stroman's fit in really well at Wrigley Field. Yep. I think that he's going to eat that crowd up. That's going to be amazing. He's going to get energy off of it. And I actually like him in Colorado this weekend. He has really good numbers in Colorado, like bizarrely good numbers in Colorado as opposed to some other pitchers. So I wouldn't be scared of starting Marcus Stroman this weekend. And I think he's going to do good things. But yeah, the most interesting guy from a power standpoint in the Cubs rotation is Justin Steele, who I think has a job as long as Wade Miley is on the IL, and he looked really good against the Brewers.
Yeah, he did. And I wonder if lefties are going to give the Brewers a hard time for a while now too. I'd like to see what happens with him. Steele was interesting. His first start against the Reds last year, for about four innings, he was untouchable. And then that fifth inning, he tired a little bit. I think there was a defensive miscue, and then the gates broke open. And I feel like he's another margin of error sort of guy too, unfortunately.
Little bit of a margin of error sort of guy, although he's done that a couple of times. He did against the Reds. He actually had a really nice start against the Dodgers last year. I watched him go toe-to-toe against the Dodgers. That was one of my favorite games that I saw in person last season. The Cubs are going to piggyback him with Keegan Thompson a lot, and Keegan Thompson might get a spot start here and there too. Their pitch lab has done a nice job of developing some names you've never heard of. So if there's ever a fifth starter out there for the Chicago Cubs and you're like, can I trust this guy? You might be able to. They've got some interesting arms out there.
Yeah, they do. It's a shame Edward Alzolay is hurt because he was going to be the power arm that they didn't have. And
he developed a new pitch. He developed a cutter towards the end of the season to try to combat some of the issues he was having with left-handed power. Right. He had the worst lefty power splits in baseball last year. And look, I know, like, lefty splits, righty splits, that's not news or anything. But when you looked at his splits in particular, he was like an order of magnitude worse than any other pitcher against left-handed batters. And that cutter looked like he had started to cut into it at the end of the season. And I am excited to see what he does when he's healthy.
Yeah, I am too. Anthony Desclafani had that same issue, and it was a similar response to try to attack that there. Back first with the Reds and now with the Giants, obviously. The Giants always like to grab ex-Red pitchers and try to make them better, and it usually works. So Alex Wood's out there having fun. Kevin Gausman was a Red for about a minute, and, you know, they could have gotten more out of him. They could have tried. They non-tendered him, too, by the way.
The Giants and Cubs have some really similar things going on in terms of their philosophy with pitching right now, and it's not a mistake. Scott Harris, who is the GM for the Giants, came from the Cubs front office. I think the Giants obviously did a little bit of a better job with that last year, which is why they won 107 games, and the Cubs had to trade all their players at the deadline. But I do think that the Cubs strategy with pitching could pan out better than people think it will, but it requires some really pristine defense, and I'm not sure that we have seen that today.
Yeah, I mean, you do have, as you said, Nico Horner, Andrelton Simmons. Hopefully he looks like the Andrelton Simmons of old instead of an old Andrelton Simmons. But we'll see. We'll see about that. They have all this interest. And they're a weird team because they've got these young guys coming up, and then you've got Patrick Wisdom, Frank Schwindel, Rafael Ortega. Not old guys necessarily, but middle age for baseball guys that are finally getting their first chance.
Yeah, guys who are kind of blocked in other places. I mean, Frank Schwindel looks like the real deal. I know he's gotten off to a slow start this season, mm-hmm. but the bat has always played in the minors. It's sort of bananas to me that he didn't get a shot at some point with the Royals or with the A's to see what he could do with that. I think Frank Schwindel is going to turn around and come out of it. I am a lot worried about Patrick Wisdom. The strikeout rate last year was abysmal. It was, I think it was 40% at the end of the season. It might've been 39.8 or something, but it was really high. It's higher this season. He's striking out close to 47% of the time. And he just kind of looks late on everything. So that power you were getting from Wisdom before hasn't manifested. I found myself wondering if Jonathan Villar is going to get some more playing time there, but they seem to be committed to Wisdom at the moment.
Now that leads into another question I had about VR, but and plus when Simmons comes back, that's yet another person into the mix too that could lead them pull Wisdom. So and yes, I did that on purpose. Sorry. Not sorry. One more pitcher before we talk about one more starting pitcher. This is a prospect, Caleb Killian. When I saw him in the Arizona Fall League, it was his first outing. It was not a good outing. It was awful. I was sitting with Keith Law and we were watching it, and he's like, I really want to see this guy. He's a guy who came over in the Bryant trade. 7 runs later, and there were a couple of real shots. There were some command issues. It was awful. And then I look and see at the end of the Arizona Fall League, he's like the championship game MVP. You know, I see now why they traded for him. And I want to know, how quickly do you see him coming up? Do you see him getting much of a chance this season?
Caleb Killian was putting up those numbers last year, late in the season after the Bryant trade, and he piqued my interest immediately. I am a huge fan of Caleb Killian. I'm actually planning on taking a couple of field trips to some Cubs minor league games to get some eyes on him, because I'm super stoked about him. Here's the problem with the Cubs and their prospects for this season. If they don't have a winning record at the trade deadline, they have a lot of one-year contracts that they can flip for even more prospects. And there's just really not an incentive for them to start the clock of a Brennan Davis or a Caleb Killian, or, you know, Braylon Marquez kind of took a step backwards last year, but he's still a really interesting arm lefty who throws about 98 miles per hour. Like, they have some prospects who could make a difference in the second half of this season if the Cubs are winning. And I just don't know that they have built a team at the moment that is going to have a lead in the division to give those prospects a chance at the end of 2022. But I will tell you, I drafted my first dynasty team this offseason. I'm really excited about it. And I've got Caleb Killian on that team. I've got Brennan Davis on that team too. And I am very excited to see what they do in 2023 and beyond, because I think both of them are going to be monsters.
Yeah, I'm excited about them too. And you're right about the team context. Look at the Royals last year with Bobby Witt. We all thought he was going to get the call early, but after starting well early on in the season, they took a nosedive pretty hard, pretty fast. And there was less of an incentive for them to call him up. And that's what happened. So now we see him this year at least. But that might be a reason to pump the brakes for this for 2022. Before we move on, talk about the bullpen. A quick note from our friends at WynnBET. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more are at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 9 states: Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. Register for WynnBET today, make a qualifying deposit, and wager to receive $200 in free bets. Promotion may vary by state. Download WynnBET now. That's WYNNBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. I'm Jeff Erickson. My guest today is Sarah Sanchez from Bleed Cubby Blue and Cuppa Cubby Blue. I teased the bullpen, but my goodness, I'm bearing the lead. We titled the podcast Seiya Suzuki Splashy Start with Sarah Sanchez. A lot of S's in there. Let's talk Suzuki. How awesome is he?
better than advertised, and I had high hopes. I mean, so I did a deep dive on Seiya Suzuki, sort of looking both when he came over, but also looking at the outfield options for the Cubs, because it's pretty crowded out there. And if you're trying to make some fantasy decisions, that's something that you want to keep an eye on. One of the things that I found was a community piece over on Fangraphs that is outstanding. I can't recommend it highly enough, and I'm blanking on the author at the moment, so I apologize that I'm not giving them credit, but this looked at players who came over from the MPB in their season immediately before they came over to the major leagues and how they did hitting wise there and how they did hitting wise in the majors. And in the case of Shohei Ohtani, it looked at both of his last two seasons because he had been injured the immediate season before. Seiya Suzuki's numbers were better than either of Ohtani's numbers as a hitter. Now, obviously, Suzuki is not a two-way player, so I'm not saying he's the next Shohei Ohtani, but I am saying he might be a better pure hitter than Shohei Ohtani. And if you've watched any Cubs games so far this season, you probably agree. Seiya Suzuki's doing a couple of things that are really interesting, and at least one of them stabilizes early enough that it's caught my eye. He does not chase pitches. His outside of the zone swing rate is the lowest in baseball among qualified batters. It's 8.3%. He has a lot of strikeouts at the moment, but it's because he's watching pitches. And if you are watching him, it's almost like you can see him taking notes on how pitchers are approaching him and trying to get an idea of what they will do. The most impressive thing to me about this is that those first two starts against Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff, he did not look overpowered at all. Those are two of the best pitchers that Major League Baseball can offer. The Brewers are one of the best pitching scouting teams in the country, in my opinion. They're really good at how they face batters. They're really good at having a game plan for new hitters. And Seiya Suzuki absolutely won that first round against Brewers pitching. He's hitting to all fields. He's hitting home runs to all fields. And he's doing something that Chicago Cubs fans may have forgotten about because it's been so long since we've seen it. But situational hitting with this kid is off the charts. So if there is a guy on second or there's a guy he needs to move over, he gets it done to move the guy over. He hits the sack fly when he's supposed to. It's why he has 9 RBIs in 5 games. He's, you know, I know that RBIs are one of those stats that they're not predictive, and it's not something that we look at like a chase rate or something to see if he's a great hitter, but it does tell you a lot about his baseball IQ and how he approaches the game. Seiya Suzuki looks like the real deal, and I'm excited to see if he can maintain it. Obviously, MLB pitchers are going to adjust. I think Suzuki's going to adjust back. He looks awesome.
He does. He really does. I mean, the ball he hit off Peralta was just monster shot. It was a hanger, wasn't the fastball, but still, nonetheless, it was fun to watch. You know, as you mentioned, Burnes, Woodruff, Peralta. That's a nice way to break into the majors, and he handled just fine. Now he gets to go to Colorado.
I think he's going to be awesome in Colorado. I can't wait to see what he does in that ballpark. You know, he hit 2 home runs. He had a 2 home run game against the Pirates, and the Rockies are not throwing anyone against Seiya Suzuki that I think is going to overpower him or even be a challenge in the way that Brewers pitching was in the opening series. So I think that Seiya Suzuki could have a really big weekend.
Yep. By the way, that Fangraphs article, I think it's Dan Szymborski. I never pronounce his name right, but he's been Dan's been in the sabermetric community forever. Really good follow on Twitter, and does great work at Fangraphs. So check that out. And he actually does some of the projections over at one of the projection machines too, if I recall correctly.
Zips projection machine.
Yep. Which makes sense because he's got the Z in his last name, and that probably is a clue on how to pronounce his name. But I'll become a little less clueless in the future about that. Okay, so we got Seiya Suzuki. He's awesome. What other things should we be looking forward to on a positive note on the Cubs lineup? Who are you also excited to see?
You know, I'm actually really excited to see what Nico Horner does this year. Yep. If he can stay healthy, he, you know, showed up in the best shape of his life. One of those types of stories. Mm-hmm. The defense looks good at shortstop right now with Simmons injured. He's getting a chance to play every single day. And I didn't have Nico Horner as the first home run for the Cubs this season, but he's the one who hit it. And it didn't look like a cheap shot. It was an absolute laser. And if he's actually going to realize some power this year, he's a super nice player because he's going to get a lot of at bats. He's a contact hitter. So he's going to give you like a 270, 280 type of average. And if he's going to hit you 10 or 15 home runs, that's a good player to have in your lineup. He doesn't really have a challenge for playing time other than some old injured guys that the Cubs have brought on. So if Nico is dealing, they're obviously going to let him do his thing. Other guys that I'm interested in, Ian Happ looks like MVP Ian Happ. And look, I know. I have written the piece, "Will the Real Ian Happ Please Stand Up?" Mm-hmm. He is either an MVP player or he is one of the worst hitters in baseball. But he came out this year looking like MVP Ian Happ. And if he can maintain that, if he has actually changed his approach enough that he is not going to have those super low lows and he can just keep a more even keel and have those spikes of greatness, Ian Happ is still a first round draft pick. He's still a guy who could theoretically put up an MVP season. And along those same lines, another person I'm super interested in, although in a little bit of a playing time competition with Ian Happ, but I think there's a way around it. Clint Frazier is another first round draft pick, had some concussion problems with the Yankees. I think that the worst that we've seen from Clint Frazier can almost all be attributed to injury. And there is a world, admittedly, a lot of things have to go right for this to happen, but there is a world where both Clint Frazier and Ian Happ channel that prospect pedigree that they had when they were picked in the first round. And you wind up with an outfield of Frazier, Happ, Suzuki, and that outfield could theoretically mash. And I'm real interested if they do.
And theoretically, Brennan Davis on the way sometime later on, too, which would be pretty sassy, too. I think Ian Happ, all he has to do is just his mental approach has to be, I am playing the Reds right now, and that would do it. He just owns the Reds. You know, he went to University of Cincinnati, too. I mean, there's that connection, you know, just tore them apart. In fact, it kind of turned around a season, I felt like, last year when there was a series against them where he had like five homers in 4 days, something of that nature, just tore them apart.
I think that was right before Ian Happ got hurt. I was ready for the Ian Happ breakout for 2021, and then he got hurt, and it had happened in Cincinnati. It's not just Cincinnati, though. Ian Happ really can sustain like a real nice wOBA with some power. In fact, people forget that in 2019, he spent a lot of his season in AAA. He was trying to get that strikeout rate down and trying to figure out a way to make better contact at the plate. When he came up in September, he put up a month's worth of numbers that would blow anyone's mind. They looked as good as any player in baseball. The longest home run hit in 2019 was for the Cubs, was not hit by Chris Bryant. It was not hit by Wilson Contreras. It was not hit by Anthony Rizzo. It was hit by Ian Happ.
Yep. He hit the first homer of the season in 2018. I remember that against the Marlins. Started the scoring for the season there. He's had a lot of those moments. He's just got to pull together a full season. He's got to stay healthy, too. What's your thought on Nick Madrigal? I'm conflicted on him, so I want to hear what you have to say about him.
I mean, I like Nick Madrigal a lot as a contact bat. I like him a lot as a second baseman. I am a little bit wary. My biggest concern with the Nico Nick situation was who was going to play there if and when Andrelton Simmons is healthy and presumably playing it short so that the Cubs have better defense for this rotation that we just talked about, because neither of them really profiles as a designated hitter type. It would be kind of strange to see them in that role, but both of them are young and both of them need at bats. As long as Andrelton Simmons is on the IL, I think that you're pretty safe having Nico and Nick Madrigal in your lineup, because both of them are going to play and both of them are going to do fairly similar things. I worry a little bit about playing time when Andrelton Simmons is back.
Yeah. Makes me wonder, why did they sign Simmons? I guess for the defense, but I always thought that Horner was a pretty strong defender, though, too. It just needed some time. He had this weird breaking into baseball. Remember, Addison Russell got suspended, so they called up Horner before I think he was ready, and then buried him the following year.
Yeah, he has very few minor league appearances. In fact, if I remember, the AA season had already ended, so Nico Horner got the call up when he was at home on his couch and was told that he basically needed to be at Wrigley in September, and he showed up and was absolutely amazing. I've heard from his college coaches and from other coaches that his approach to the game is just super mature for his age, that he plays older than every level that he's in. So I think that Andrelton Simmons is more of a backstop in case Nico Horner gets hurt. He has dealt with injuries so far in his time in the majors. He's a backstop in case Nico or Nick gets in over their head, because either of those dudes can play a solid second base, and then you would at least have a theoretically plus defender in Andrelton Simmons at short, which the Cubs absolutely need. They can't afford to just throw a AAA guy at short with the rotation that they have.
Yeah, that's for sure. Quickly, let's attack the bullpen real quick. David Robertson, is he the guy?
I think he is for right now. David Ross is a little bit old school here in that, like, he kind of looks for guys who have saved in the past, and that's who's going to get the save. I will say, I think that Michael Givens is the more electric arm. That funky arm slot that he has is just ridiculous. And, you know, I'm trying to remember who I was just talking to about this on a different podcast, but we were talking about it was my podcast. I was talking to Craig Calcaterra about this when we were talking about his new book. You know, Michael Givens has always played in remarkably hitter-friendly environments.
Yes, he has.
In Baltimore, he played in Cincinnati. Like, now he gets to play at Wrigley Field, and if the wind's blowing in at Wrigley, Michael Givens is going to have a much more pitcher-friendly environment to see what he can do. And one of the things that jumped out at me, if you read Baseball Prospectus, Mikey Ejido over there, before Michael Givens signed with the Cubs, had a piece looking at him relative to other relievers. And there's a chart there that he has that shows like vertical angle and where his release point is. And I will not bore all of you with all of the specifics here. But the point is that on this chart, you've got every single reliever kind of mapped out. And the three outliers who are all kind of clustered in this weird zone together are Paul Sewald, Craig Kimbrell, and Michael Givens. And that's an interesting set of companies for Mr. Givens.
That's definitely an eclectic trio, for sure. And Givens was good with the Reds for a while. Again, the ballpark gets everyone there. He did ultimately end up leading the Reds in saves, despite getting traded there at the deadline. He and Heath Hembree, for those trivia masters out there, but eight saves apiece for them. But yeah, I think he looks good. I mean, he gave up the one solo homer. Sure, that happens. But 5 Ks, no walks so far. Like you said, live arm. I like Robertson a lot. I think he's always been good when healthy. He's 20 months removed from TJS now. And, he's gotten it done before. I think those are two very good arms. I think both are probably better suited to closing than Rowan Wick, despite Wick wanting to be the closer.
I agree with you. I'm somebody who was out there as a Rowan Wick has the job, but as soon as those other arms were added, I don't think that Wick is the guy anymore. And I think that's good for him. Like, I know he wants it, and I think he's better in a seventh inning role. They've also got some other interesting arms out there. Chris Martin had a nice inning of work the other day. And Ethan Roberts threw a slider the other day that honestly blew my mind against the Pirates. It had so much break on it that it's worth going out to find the video of it. He's making his major league debut right now. But if he throws that slider consistently, I don't think he's going anywhere, because that slider is absurd.
And he's always worked in the bullpen in the minors too. I'm looking at him up right now. I don't know a whole lot about him, but anytime someone mentions it, okay, got to check it out. There's certain guys that have been that way that reveal themselves early on in the season. Sometimes you don't have the bandwidth to get it all in spring training. So like another guy like that, Felix Bautista on the Orioles is another arm that I've seen some like this rising fastball that made Wander Franco miss. And you make Wander Franco miss, that's getting some work done there. So I love hearing names like that this time of year.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All right. We're going to do some news of the day, but first got to take care of some business, a couple of reads, and then we'll get in our Blue Wire sponsor note as well. So hang in for 1 minute here, folks. Bet against others with no fees involved. That's right. No pesky hidden fees to ruin your day. Better Edge is a social betting marketplace where there's no fee on each transaction. Better Edge is a social betting marketplace, and chances are it's legal in your state. We bring back betting to its social roots where you can like, comment, and challenge other users all within the app. Play without getting played at Better Edge. Go to betteredge.com. That's BETTOREDGE.com to sign up today. Thanks to Better Edge. Also from Vivid Seats, baseball is back. That's right, an entire glorious season, all 162 games. And with live events resuming, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. Every backdoor slider, every round tripper, every doubleheader can be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats rewards, you can start earning free tickets from your very first purchase. Just buy, collect stamps, and redeem. It's that easy. From behind the dugout to up to the upper level, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the games that matter to you. Pro tip, buy tickets for your whole group, split the bill, and make progress towards your free ticket even faster. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Life happens live. Thanks to Vivid Seats. I actually hope to use them for the Reds-Dodgers game this weekend. I'm going to take my daughter, so should be fun for that. Finally, we always host our podcast on the Blue Wire Network, so here are a couple ads from them.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And thank you for your indulgence in hearing all the ads. Again, I'm Jeff Erickson. I am here with Sarah Sanchez from Bleed Cubby Blue and Cup of Cubby Blue. Let's talk some news of the day. And the biggest news item on the cycle for the last 24 hours has been Clayton Kershaw's near perfecto. 7 perfect innings. Beautiful job. It was amazing to see him back after having not seen him pitch during the playoffs last year.
13 strikeouts on 80 pitches is absolutely phenomenal for anyone, but particularly for a guy who's dealt with some injury issues. I have Clayton Kershaw in a couple of different leagues, and I am loving that pickup right now because I got him so late for somebody who can still come out and do that. There's a couple of interesting things about that outing that I want to talk about. The slider usage was up. He really adjusted to do the things that he wanted to do to make sure he was getting guys out. But before I do that, can I just say, I know he's had injury problems. I know the Dodgers have larger ambitions this year. I hate what I'm seeing with pulling guys in no-hitters and perfectos early this season. Yu Darvish and Sean Manaea started the Padres season back-to-back starts with no hits, and both of them got pulled. Clayton Kershaw has a perfect game going, and he gets pulled. And I got to say, I agree with Jake Arrieta here. Jake Arrieta was out on Twitter last night saying you cannot pull Clayton Kershaw when he has a perfect game going. I still like history. When I get the alert on my phone that there is a no-hitter or a perfect game in the seventh inning, I want to tune in and I want to watch it and I want to be interested. And I don't want to see Alex Vesia give up a hit to the second guy he faces. It's just not why I watch the game of baseball. And I don't think that's why anyone else watches the game of baseball either. So let Clayton finish his game.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I would have loved to have seen that. I also have no problem with why the Dodgers did it, because he was hurt last year. Because of the shortened spring training, he hadn't thrown 80 pitches since June. And the velocity was down in his last inning at work. I mean, these are things they knew too. I mean, I think they had all that information. As a fan, I want to see it. Maybe in start 3 and start 4, it might be a little bit different. If we had a full spring training, it might be a little bit different. If it wasn't crappy weather in Minnesota, it might be different. I don't know. These are all things that I thought were mitigating factors, but I get you. I get it. We all want to see it. And unfortunately, it's not like, oh, 3 times out from now, it's going to happen again. It just doesn't work that way. You know, you can't have everything going the way it does. He had it on a string. I'm thrilled that he, for at least one start, he looked like the Clayton Kershaw that we know. Not the compromised version. I want to say broken because he's still pretty good, even when he wasn't wholly himself. But compromised version that we saw last year. I want to see like full-on Clayton Kershaw, even if it's not to the benefit of my fantasy teams.
Yeah, I mean – Clayton Kershaw looks, you know, he's not 2014 Clayton Kershaw when he would just go out. He was automatic and you knew he was going to the Hall of Fame. And I still think he's going to the Hall of Fame, but it is interesting to me. And it's just a little heartbreaking. Like, I want to live in a world where a guy like that gets a shot at a perfect game. And I feel like the more analytics have encroached on managerial decisions, and particularly for certain teams, you know, the Dodgers, Dave Roberts, I've lost track. This is like the third or fourth guy that Dave Roberts has pulled with a perfect game or a no hitter in the works in the last few years. And it's just, I don't know, as a fan, I miss it. I miss being able to tune in and see every single pitch and wonder, is this the day that Clayton Kershaw is going to be perfect? And we'll never know.
Sure, that's true. I get it. I don't think this was an analytics decision, though. I think this was a health decision. I think that's different, but you're right. Ross Stripling, I remember, you know, had the no hitter against the Giants, and I think in his debut, if I'm not mistaken, too, and he got pulled. And his dad afterward thanked Roberts though for that. So I mean, there's always countervailing arguments. Yeah, we always want to see history made. There's only 23 ever in perfect games. We saw three in the last year. We had one was 2012. We had three of them that year. King Felix has the last one too. And my buddy, I play softball with Brendan Ryan. He was on the defensive end of the last out. So that was pretty cool. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. He also made the last out against Philip Humper that same year. So yeah, both sides of that coin, as far as that goes. And now I got to tell Brendan tonight at softball that I mentioned him on the podcast. So there's that too. But other stuff, Vlad Guerrero Jr. was amazing last night. What a laser show.
So anytime you're hitting multiple home runs off of Gerrit Cole, I am interested. But then he hits the third home run. I think it landed in the second deck. I saw a tweet. He had like 1,268 feet of home runs yesterday, and he was kind of stepping around the base paths in the Bronx. The boo birds were raining down. I love Vladito. He's one of my favorite players to watch. I don't have him anywhere, mainly because every time I was in that sort of like 6 to 9 spot of a draft and I did a mock of it, I couldn't get the team I wanted building around Vlad. I needed to get steals, or I needed to get a third baseman there, or I needed to get pitching. Like I had problems with every build I did in a mock where I started with Vlad, but he's a tremendously exciting player. I love this Blue Jays team, although I'm a little heartbroken that it looks like we've lost Teoscar Hernandez for a little bit. That was crushing for me. I do have Teoscar on a couple of teams, but that light show from Vlad was stunning and incredible. And I also loved the tweet from his dad saying the kid is on fire, which I just thought was great.
Yeah, that was awesome. He also had that laser double down the right field line too. And the pitchers he did it against, Cole and Loaisiga. I mean, Loaisiga is awesome. And hit that one in the second deck there. It was beautiful.
I can't remember if I have Loaisiga on my Tout Wars team, which is a saves and holds league, or if I targeted Loaisiga and just missed on him, but you're absolutely right. Loaisiga has nothing to sneeze at either. If you're in a saves and holds league, he's definitely on somebody's roster.
You have him.
Yeah, he's
you
likely unavailable.
I'm looking at the roster now. You got him. I have him in like both main NFBC main event leagues. I think he was active on both teams this week. So yeah. Well, it was a solo shot. It's fine.
Yeah. We're both going to wear that home run. It's okay.
It's all good. It's all good. Speaking of Tout Wars, you're doing Tout Wars for the first time this year. You're doing the saves plus holds league, and it's OBP instead of batting average. It's also innings pitch instead of wins. How'd the draft go? How do you like your team so far?
I absolutely love how the draft went. I did a lot of planning and mocks with that to make sure that I had a strategy going in that I felt like I could execute and that the players would be available to put together the team that I wanted. Really love the alternate scoring format. I'm more of an analyst by trade than a fantasy person. I mean, I've played in a lot of different leagues over the last few years. I'm in GLARF, in the Earth League, and some other places. But this is, you know, definitely stepping it up a notch to be in that Tout Wars league against Alex Fast is in that league. Chris Towers is in that league. Jen is in that league. Like lots of really great people who I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a little starstruck. Love the draft. Wanted Devers, Burns, and then I wanted a source of steals that could play second base. And I think I managed to pull all of that off. I actually think I overshot on saves and holds pretty considerably. So I've got to do a little bit of adjusting there, but I wanted to see where people would wind up. And frankly, saves are one of the big question marks in the league. So I didn't want any question marks there when I was on draft day. But the team itself, I could use a little bit more flexibility, definitely still getting used to the OnRoto platform. Yep. It's my first time using it, but so far so good. And we'll see how it goes. I'm feeling okay about it.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's fun to play in alternate formats, especially like if you don't have to chase saves. You don't have to have the inflation that we usually get. Liam Hendricks and Josh Hader went in the fifth round of this draft, not in the second or third that we've been seeing all season, draft season long. And as someone who I'm trying to adapt to the new reality, you know, when the saves are more concentrated in a certain number of pitchers, you have to make that decision. Do you want to get one of them or not? And it's tough being on the not side sometimes, but saves plus holds, no problem. That, you know, it takes away that problem for me. Giovanni Gallegos, come on down. You'll get a save or a hold. I don't care.
Yeah, I think my biggest regret right after that draft was that I had drafted Michael Fulmer with my second to last pick, and Chad Green was still available, and I thought that was a bit of a mistake, because I definitely would have taken Green over Fulmer if I had realized it. But honestly, if that's the question mark coming out of your draft, that's a pretty good draft.
Man, I messed up my 28th round pick. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. Yeah, but I'm looking at your team. Corbin Burns, Rafael Devers, that's a fun turn. And you had to draft 12th because – rookie hazing.
I'm new.
Yeah, you know, but the new people towards the end. You and Matt Truss are new to the league, but that's a heck of a start.
Oh, it's a great start. And you know, Burns got roughed up by the Cubs, which honestly I wasn't that sad about. I will say, if you had shown me just like the lines for Corbin Burns and Kyle Hendricks on opening day, not put the names on them, I would have definitely reversed those. I would have thought that Hendricks was Burns and Burns was Hendricks. I think Burns is fine. There's nothing in his peripherals or his velocity or anything going on there that leads me to believe it was anything other than just a bad start on a really cold day at Wrigley Field. So, I love that start. Really love Devers and didn't want to mess around with third base, frankly. Like, I felt like every time this draft season that I let third base slide past the fifth or sixth round, I wound up with some guys that I didn't like nearly as much.
Right. It's been a topic we've been covering all year, is like, what do you do at third base for sure? And Devers is fun. He's just fun. You saw him turn on that Garrett Cole fastball on opening day and like, yes, more like that, please. Plus you have the ultimate fun player in Wander Franco too. Nick Castellanos in Philly is fun.
Well, Wander Franco in an OBP league is just a steal, in my opinion. I think that he's an on-base guy, and even if you're like a little bit worried about his batting average, I think in an OBP league, Wander Franco can definitely play. This is the only league where I got both Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber, and we did the draft before we knew they were going to be Philadelphia Phillies, but I am thrilled with that. They were both targets of mine. I didn't get them in a lot of places because they went higher than I was able to draft them. Like, I was going to take them on my next pick and they went right before me. But in this league, I have them both. And man, that Phillies team is just going to rake.
They're going to
a raking lineup.
They're going to rake and they're going to drop. They're going to just don't watch them play defense, you know, or do if you like that, if you want the, you know, a fan of farce. So that's all that. Poor Alec Bohm the other day. Oh, he was just miserable. But,
it's going to happen to all of them at some point in time. They have a lot of guys who have all been projected to be designated hitters at various points in time.
That's right. And by the way, Bohm's getting on base almost every single time, so don't cry for him too much there. But that was just a tough watch. But Schwarber, man, Schwarber in Philly, that just, please stay healthy. That's all.
I love Schwarber in Philly for a couple of reasons. That home run he hit to open the season was just perfection. But, you know, Kevin Long at the Nationals was really the person who helped him turn around what the Cubs had never been able to do and unlock that next level of hitter in him in 2021. And so when Kevin Long went over to the Phillies and then the Phillies turned around and signed Schwarber, I was like, wow, he gets to keep working with the hitting coach that really helped him step it up. I think Schwarber has a 40 home run season in him, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him just blow well past that and hit like 45.
Sure, I can see that too. And Castellanos too. I mean, we were all talking about, well, Castellanos isn't going to be in Cincinnati anymore. Well, Philly's a pretty good landing spot too, ballpark-wise, lineup-wise. You know, hitting behind Harper, man, that's tough. I don't know. Can you handle that? I don't know, but
it's just a merciless on-base percentage onslaught, too. Yep. It's like these are guys who mash, but they're also guys who get on base. I pity the pitchers in that park.
Yeah, NL East just got a lot harder, that's for sure. Although Tyler McGill shut him down, and Tyler McGill's looked great in two outings so far.
I picked up Tyler McGill on waivers in a couple of different leagues, and I'm very glad I did. He's been one of my best pitchers so far this season. He looks incredible and he looks comfortable. A lot of times you get called up to like fill in for a Jacob DeGrom and the moment can overwhelm you, and it has not overwhelmed Tyler McGill at all. He's got that, you know, he's got that huge, so tall. Like when he releases the ball, you're kind of like, oh my God. I love Tyler McGill. And I doubt he's available anywhere right now, but if he was, just snatch him up right now.
Well, and maybe not, but maybe you trade, you know, Todd Zola used to call it buy high, you know, because, you know, the generic, basic, very good fantasy advice is buy low, sell high, buy the dip, you know, get, you know, buy when there's blood in the streets, whatever phraseology you want to do. And that's generally good advice. But I think sometimes with these breakout guys, you can do what, you know, people say you're buying high, but you're actually not paying full price. When you see a guy that's a breakout guy, I remember Jose Bautista the year he broke out. He's my canonical example I use all the time. No, he's not just this good. He's that good, and he's going to stay that good for a while. And you can get him still for like a year and a half after his breakout. You could still get him underpriced.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that lots of people don't recognize how good Tyler McGill can be for a sustained amount of time because he wasn't projected to be part of the starting rotation at first. But I think he's going to be, and I'm here for it. That Mets pitching staff is really quite a bit of fun.
It is. It is. And now Taijuan Walker's hurt. So that provides the avenue even when, if and when DeGrom comes back, but I don't think it's coming anytime soon either. I think McGill's pretty well ensconced. I think it's going to be hard to get him out of there. Eloy Jimenez did not start today after hurting his ankle yesterday in the rain. Man, he was off to such a nice little start, hit that massive homer yesterday against Robbie Ray. I'm a big fan of Eloy, but I'm starting to worry. Is he injury prone at all?
I think Eloy might be injury prone, but the Chicago news types have said that he got good news. He's feeling fine. He had a good night's rest and he didn't get any bad news about that ankle. So he should be back soon. I think the bigger problem is that this is now a continual issue for him, right? I mean, that pectoral tear last year when he was, I don't even know what he was doing. It was like, why are you trying to steal home runs at the last couple of games of spring training? I had Eloy on my TGFBI team last year. I had Eloy and Starling Marte and Marcelo Zuna. I mean, it was just like a crush of like, and that guy's gone and that guy's gone. I think I lost like my top five picks at one point in time. So I think Eloy is great. I think Eloy hits like the natural. I actually watched him do that move when he was in the minor leagues. He literally hit out the light tower down the line. I just don't know if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, it's a concern. And right now, all the White Sox, it seems like that's a concern right now. It's every day there's a new one.
Yeah, and particularly for their pitching staff, I'm pretty worried about it because the Royals and Tigers are not the bottom dwellers that they once were. And that division, losing Lance Lynn was a huge blow for them, particularly since they didn't re-sign Carlos Rodon. And like, I love Lucas Giolito, but you've got to have some people behind him doing some things. And right now, there's a lot of question marks in that White Sox rotation for me.
I mean, when you're turning to Vince Velasquez as your home opener, I mean, that's your sign right there. It's a good lesson in needing to build depth. We talked about Tyler McGill. I mean, ready to step in right away. You need that sort of depth. The thing with Rodon is, okay, it's one thing not to sign him to a three-year deal or a five-year deal, but give the qualifying offer for crying out loud. Worst thing that happens is he takes it. There's not a bad 1-year deal out there.
Right. I mean, 1 year of Carlos Rodon would have been great for them, right? Like, the man, he looked incredible in his first start for the Giants. And instead, they're sitting there, like, you kind of wonder, like, is Michael Kopech going to get some starts? What's going to happen with Ronaldo Lopez? And those are live arms. They're interesting arms. I've watched them a lot and they're fun, but it's not quite the same as having a rotation that is anchored by Lynn, Rodon, and Giolito. And right now, they don't have two of three of those guys.
Yeah. And they're counting on Kopech to get stretched out. Now it's not just it'd be great if he threw 150, 160 innings. It's like, we need you to throw 150 to 160 innings. And that's a big difference there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll see about that. I know it started as a Cubs cast. We ended as a Sox cast there, but you just dropped a new podcast. Tell everybody about it.
Yeah, so the latest episode of Cup of Cubby Blue came out. We go series by series with that show, so we kind of break down what happened in the last series, look ahead to the next one, and try to cover news and notes from around the league. So we have a few different items of interest there if you want to know what happened in that riveting Cubs-Pirates series. Okay, you probably don't, but that's fine. Like, you know, you can check that out. However, if you are interested in the battle of surprising teams at the start of this season that's coming up this weekend at Coors Field between the Cubs, who are 3-2, half a game back of the Cardinals, and the Rockies, who started 4-1 and managed to make it look like they were competitive with the Dodgers, which I don't really think they are, but it's still interesting. Definitely check it out. The Rockies have a ton of interesting hitters at the moment. Connor Joe in particular is doing some interesting things out there in Colorado. And of course, you've got Chris Bryant and Randall Grichuk out there, who are not surprises, but you always knew Coors Field was going to play well for those guys. We also did a little bit on the history that was made in the Giants game earlier this week when yes. Alyssa Nacken made her coaching debut. It's the first baseball card I have ever bought. I have a Topps card commemorating Alyssa Nacken's debut, and I'm pretty excited about it. And a little bit on the MLB streaming deals, which frankly I think are probably the worst idea that amongst the worst idea that MLB has ever had. Fans have spent years saying, hey, we just want to be able to watch games without blackouts, make it easy for me to predict when and where I can watch my team. And instead, MLB has decided to grab a slew of random games and throw them on Peacock Premium or Apple Plus or Amazon Prime or anywhere else that you may not already have a subscription to. This league is trying to extract more money from the fans who already watch it. And I already pay quite a bit of money for my MLB TV subscription. I don't necessarily want to tack on $20 more a month so that I can hopefully catch the random game of the week on whatever.
Instead of cutting the cord one place, you've added 10 other cords.
Exactly.
That's super frustrating. I'm with you at lockstep. Plus, the Cubs, we all know about the various markets and blackout issues that they have to deal with there. They're among the worst teams as far as that goes. I mean, don't live in Nashville, don't live in Iowa. We know that.
Man, to be a baseball fan in Iowa, you've got to be hardcore because you can't watch any of, like, I think you're blacked out from six teams, and whoever they are playing at any given moment, you can theoretically be blacked out from half the league.
And it's such an anachronistic thing to do that too. Just to satisfy the RSNs, but so it goes. This is supposed to be a happy conversation though. I hate that we're ending on that, but that's okay. Sarah, I really enjoy talking with you as always. And we hope to do it again sometime soon.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks for having me. This is great.
No problem. Thanks to WynnBET for the sponsorship. Coming up tomorrow, two-star starters with Clay and Todd. As always, thanks for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Please click that like button. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe. It matters to us a lot. We appreciate you listening. Have a great day.